Welcome to the Midday. Hello there, Stephanie.
Hello there, Norman. And what a Friday it is. We have some guests in the studio.
That's right. You know, we wouldn't even have room for all of their instruments, even if they had brought them. But we're happy to have them and their music.
We're talking about the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet, whose members are Stephen Newbro, Jeff Lambert, Joseph Hagedorn, and Ben Gattegno. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
They're squeezed in here like sardines, clustered around a couple of mics.
And, very talented sardines, though.
They are one of the world's leading guitar ensembles. They were founded in 1986, and Joe, I believe you're a founding member and one of
That's
the arrangers.
Correct.
That's right. And boy, you've gotten some wonderful reviews. And in fact, you've been called witty. And I don't know if that's been referring to your music or to your scintillating conversational skills.
Well, I hope we're not tested on that today.
So what do you do for, I mean, I have to ask this question off the top, I think, because it's so obvious. There is not a lot of music written for four guitars, needless to say. I mean, there is the Rodrigo Concierto Andaluz, which you'll be playing. But other than that, how much is there, and where do you go to get more? Jump ball here. Anybody
okay,
play?
Okay, I'll start in. Well, we are really grateful for the Rodrigo Concierto for four guitars, and that was composed for the Romero family quite some time ago, and it's certainly still the most played concerto for four guitars. There are a lot of others, and we've even been responsible for commissioning a couple, but they don't get played very often. So hopefully over time that repertoire will expand.
Well, how many guitar quartets are there out there to play that kind of repertory?
Well, there's the Romero family still with some younger generation of players. There's the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet.
Sure.
There are quite a few. There are, at least to us, it seems like quite a few. But you know,
when it comes booking time, yeah.
There's a guitar quartet in Georgia and a Brazilian guitar quartet, and probably a lot of other ones that I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head, too.
You have quite a broad repertory, from flamenco dance offerings with a live dancer to Renaissance and Baroque. And your list is just enormous. How long have you all been playing together, and how did you meet?
Well, the quartet started way back in 1986, but I'm the only original member still. But we've been playing nonstop since then, and I guess that's probably the primary reason why we have such a big repertoire. Because over those years, we've commissioned many new pieces and we've arranged many new pieces. We started out originally as four guys who all knew each other in college. And then over the years, as people have retired and moved on, then we've added new people. And I'll let all of these other guys tell about themselves. But we originally met the original group at the University of Minnesota.
Jeff, you have some music on the CD that we're going to be hearing from this half hour. How did you connect with the group?
I went to the University of Wisconsin River Falls for my undergraduate, and Joe Hagedorn was the guitar teacher there, and so Joe was my teacher, and then I went off to graduate school, and during that time, Joe sent me an email saying, "We're having somebody retire from the group. Why don't you come play with us?"
Wow.
So I said, sure, yeah. Sounds good.
Well, a lot of the repertory for however many guitars, one to four, I suppose, originally was for the piano, but it was written by Spanish composers whose piano music was reminiscent of the guitar. So are those pieces, that whole repertory seems to be a natural.
Yeah, a lot of times we bring the guitar back into the music. As you say, a lot of times the piano composer is trying to imitate the guitar, and so we bring it back to, you know, what they were probably thinking of originally.
For example, we have on your CD six pieces on Spanish folk songs by Enrique Granados, and this is one of them. played by our guests today, the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. Minneapolis Guitar Quartet.
With a Basque dance, or Vascongada, by Enrique Granados. Wow, that was sonically beautiful. We were listening to it here on the speakers, going from one guitar to the next and kind of passing off. And when you write these arrangements for four guitars, do you capitalize on the strengths of each of the guitarists of the quartets, Joe? Or how do you?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, there are certain things. There's so many different techniques that can be used on the guitar, and some of us like doing some of them better than others. And so I always try to make it most fun and comfortable for everybody.
Ben and Steve, we haven't heard from you yet, the two of you. How did you connect with the quartet?
Well,
it's Steve speaking now.
Yeah. Well, I guess I actually moved to Minnesota from North Carolina to do a graduate degree at the University of Minnesota. And just by living in town and being a part of the Guitar Society, I played a little bit and got to know some people. And just like Jeff, years earlier, I got an email from Joe saying, hey, we've got another member retiring. Why don't you come audition? And I said, yes.
Dance to jig at home.
Yeah.
Dance to Basque dance at home.
Right. And then I started practicing really hard.
Yeah.
Did you start thinking, I'm not sure I'm quite good enough for this at any point in that early process?
No, I felt pretty confident that if I prepared, I would be able to get in. You know, with some luck. I didn't know how many people they were auditioning, and I didn't know, but I felt pretty confident that if I prepared well enough, I'd make it.
So when you're performing a concert in a live situation, do you ever get into these little sort of like, isn't he playing a little too loud? Isn't he sort of like hogging the spotlight here a little right now? You get into any of that kind of one-upmanship?
I try to do that.
I think nobody does that on purpose, and we try to get all that worked out in rehearsal.
See which line is going to be coming out and that sort
absolutely.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Well, what happens, at least what goes on with me a lot of the time is when you get to the concert stage or where you rehearse, like, you know, we rehearsed with the orchestra on Wednesday night and last night, it's so different from, you know, Joe's upstairs where we practice that, you know, I know that we're all playing the same, but I can hear the part so much differently. So sometimes I get taken by surprise. I can't concentrate on my part because I'll think, that's what he does. Why? I didn't realize that. Well, it sounds good. And, you know, I have to kind of focus.
And he's doing the same thing. He's listening to you instead
energy.
Of paying attention
so,
to his own voice.
I mean, I know that we're all, you know, playing the same, doing all the stuff we talked about in rehearsal, but sometimes it takes me by surprise.
And that's Ben Gattegno we were just hearing from. And Ben, how did you connect with the quartet?
You know, the same way as Jeff and Steve. I grew up in Minnesota, and I went to college in Mankato, Minnesota. I wouldn't expect you to know where that is, but it's right smack dab in the middle of the south central Minnesota. And I took lessons with kind of a, you know, a guy who's been in the guitar community for a long time. I went out east to the Eastman School of Music for my graduate degree. And, you know, I finished that all up. And when I came back to, now I live in Rochester, Minnesota. And one day I just came home and my answer machine was blinking and there was Joe saying, you know, someone is retiring from the group and, you know, we're wondering. So Minneapolis is blessed with a really tight-knit yet, like, very high-quality level of guitars, like a guitar community. And so, you know, we all know each other and we all appreciate each other's talents. And if one of us can't do a gig, you know, we're quick to pass on other names, and it's a great
sounds
it's
like
great
a community. Supportive network.
Very, very.
Yeah. I mean, so do you do much subbing? I mean, where you would have one member of the group substituted for a concert or something like that?
No, we don't. and we're sort of fearful of ever having to face that, that we've been lucky so far. Just 1 or 2 years ago, with one of the former members who just retired, he fractured his finger at one point. But it happened just at the perfect time. He had enough weeks in between concerts that he was fine by the next concert. So, because it really would be rather difficult, I think, for somebody to jump in and learn all the parts. But it could be done with enough warning, I suppose.
So you've got to be careful when you play those contact sports. You know, time
yes.
it so that it's
well,
not...
Frisbee too, is definitely
yeah.
out. We were talking during the break about commuting and asking whether you had driven down here. And Jeff, I was reading about one of the pieces you wrote, and it was inspired somewhat by your commute from Chicago to Minneapolis while you were in grad school. Can you tell us a little bit about Minneapolis winter? Minnesota winter.
Yeah. So when Joe asked me to come up and play in the group, well, I was a graduate student at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. And I was doing my master's, and then I went on to do a doctorate degree. And so for a few years there, I was constantly driving back and forth between Chicago and Minneapolis. I spent a lot of time on the road, and so I would go up to Minneapolis and stay at Joe's house for a week or 10 days, and we would cram in a bunch of rehearsals for our concert or recording session or whatever we had to do. And so, I guess these two pieces that I wrote, Minnesota Winter and Chicago Summer, they go together, are sort of reflective of that experience.
Well, we're just going to get winter. Sorry. If you come back in August, we'll give you Chicago Summer, but the time being what it is, and January, of course, is what I mean, we'll have Minnesota Winter by one of our guests, Jeff Lambert, the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet performing. And they were going to leave you in winter. That would be a Minnesota winter at that.
We're listening to the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. We're talking with the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. The entire quartet is right here in the studio with us. And they're in Wisconsin because they're appearing with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra tonight at the Overture Center. And the website for information is wcoconcerts.org. And you can also call 608-258-4141. That piece, by the way, was written by Jeff Lambert, who is one of the members of the quartet.
So when you have a guitar quartet, you have to somehow make sure that your instruments are all of a kind of a certain compatible nature, or how do you work all that out?
Well, I have some guitars at home that certainly wouldn't work in the group. I have some guitars that are just way too loud and would not mix at all. And so it just turns out that we all have guitars that are fairly traditionally built, and just throw them all in together, and they're comparable volume and tone quality. So, yeah, they all work and mix.
I'm told that, by a guitarist no less, that... Unlike, say, with violins, where, you know, a 350-year-old one could be really one of the very best in the world, that the golden age of guitar making is today. Do you think that's true?
I would agree.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, and certainly in one respect, that's true, which is that we aren't all fighting over antique instruments. And for that reason, I think the price of top-quality guitars has remained pretty low. So we don't have to take out a second mortgage to get a guitar like violinists.
And they also have that advantage of relative portability.
Well, very much so.
Well, we're going to ask you a little bit more about repertory, too. In about 4 minutes, by the way, we'll be having today's 12:30 quiz question. It actually even has to do with the instruments we've been talking about.
It does. And
be on guard for that.
In terms of repertory, what's the piece that you're doing with the orchestra tonight? That's question number one. Question number two, how does the balance work between a big orchestra and guitars?
Well, you amplify the guitars.
That's the short answer. Modern technology.
Yeah. You can play a guitar concerto unamplified, and I've seen it done, but boy, you really have to strain your ears to listen to it, and most of the time the guitar does get overshadowed. Rodrigo writes in such a way that a lot of times it's just the guitars playing, and then it's the orchestra, or behind the guitars it's just very thin orchestration, you know, just a couple instruments that's very transparent, doesn't get in the way of the guitar. So he's very sensitive to the balance, just in the way he wrote the piece.
I'm trying to think of guitar concertos before Rodrigo and how they would have addressed this issue. I mean, now with amplification, of course, it's not so much of an issue, but you don't hear of many guitar concerto. I'm trying to remember if, you know, Giuliani or Soar didn't even write guitar concertos, did they?
Giuliani did write guitar concertos, but I think we can assume those were really small ensembles. And then in modern times, it wasn't until Rodrigo, Ponce, Tedesco, those three all wrote concertos close to the same time, around 1940 or so. So those were written, I think, before they would have used amplification, and they certainly tried to orchestrate them in a way that they could be played without amplification. But today, they're always played with amplification. And it certainly has made it easier now for modern concertos to be written and performed.
Do you get a prettier tone that way? You don't have to work so hard at being heard when you're amplified?
Yes, we try not to amplify in a way that makes the guitar sound like it's amplified. You know, the goal is as natural a sound as possible. But yes, if it's amplified a little bit, then it's not necessary to rail on the guitar, you know.
Does that get complicated when you have four guitars? Do you have to amplify all four? Or don't you get some kind of interesting tonal overlaps that way? You have to work around that?
It doesn't seem to have been a problem, you know, because as Steve said, it's not very much boost to the sound anyway, so it's just a little extra. It's like turning it up a couple of notches.
The Rodrigo reflects the sense of Andalusia, the beautiful flavors and colors of that part of Spain. And there are some percussive parts of the music where you're using your fingernails. And I'm looking at your fingernails. They're long.
They're very nice.
You use them. I mean, those are part of your instrument. Is that something that you have to work very carefully on developing? Is that percussive part of it? Is the rhythm?
Well, I think what you're describing is, you know, the strumming technique on the guitars.
Sometimes it almost sounds like castanets or...
Yeah, there's a very percussive sound to that. And strumming, I think, has always been an important technique used on the guitar. But we really associate it more with Spanish music, I think, because that's where the technique was really developed to such a complex level. And so, you know, Rodrigo is certainly correct to want to use that in his music, because it's such an important part of Spanish music history and the history of the guitar.
The timing of the strums almost seems like it's almost like a virtuoso pianist getting a scale perfectly done. I mean, it's I don't know how you... Practice, practice, practice.
Yeah,
I guess
it takes a lot of practice. I mean, a lot of slow practice. There's these, these strums, we call them rasgueados, and there's these different patterns of finger combinations, and you just sit and play them very slow, like a pianist practicing a scale, very slow. You just work on them with your right hand, and you gradually build up speed. The most important thing, really, is to stay relaxed. It sounds like very, you know, hard, and we're really muscling our way through, but the technique is really to kind of stay relaxed and let the weight of the fingers. So, yeah, that's, we practice it a lot.
We'll practice that at home.
That'll be something to look forward to.
You can do it while watching TV. Let's get Netflix going and practice your
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Good idea. And shall we now hear straight away from composer Alberto Ginastera three Argentinian dances from our guests today, the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. That, you say, was originally written for the piano. Boy, it sure sounds like guitar music to me.
Well, that was by our guests, the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. That was the performance, anyway. And the piece was by Ginastera. We were talking about the pronunciation of his last name a little bit during the break. And
oh, man, don't get into that.
Well, let's put it this way. There is a rule about pronouncing composers' names, and that is you pronounce it usually the way they say they want to pronounce. So, I mean, when it breaks all linguistic rules you've ever heard of, that's still their prerogative. So, Ginastera it is.
Ginastera from his Catalan father.
So there. Right. We're not even going to talk about his first name.
Those were the Argentine dances, and we heard three of them performed by the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. And tonight, the orchestra, the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, is going to be doing another Ginastera piece, some variations that is just lovely. Again, for information on that concert, it's wcoconcerts.org. That's tonight at 8 p.m. at the Overture Center in Madison. And the number for tickets is 608-258-4141. We're speaking with the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. They made the trip from Minneapolis to Madison to appear with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra this evening. And it's wonderful to have four guitarists, even though you're without your guitars, but just talking about this great music and the arrangements that you've made. Speaking of making arrangements, we're going to hear from Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yeah, this is the Toccata in D, BWV 912, just to distinguish it from those other toccatas in D, and originally for organ?
Solo keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Could have been harpsichord, could have been organ.
Probably harpsichord.
And this is the kind of stuff that would have been lots of improvisational, just free-for-all, I guess, gives you some license with the orchestration.
Yeah, I think so. And it definitely has that quality. It's multiple movements kind of all linked together loosely.
And, well, here are the last of them, which is kind of atypical, I think, of Bach in that he says, with discretion and fugue in the style of a gigue. So plenty of room for creativity here from the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet. Ostensibly, the Toccata in D by Bach.
And Jeff Lambert, what were you just mentioning as we were coming off?
Oh, if any of your listeners have perfect pitch, they'll know that it's called Toccata in D, but we transposed it and played it in the key of B.
Well, that's your right to do when you're arranging these things.
All right, let me ask why. Isn't B, from a purely layman standpoint, a harder key to play in than D?
Yes, it is. And
much, much harder.
And when I passed out the parts to this arrangement, I got some complaints about why are we playing in five sharps.
You just like the sound better? You gotta give more of an edge or what?
There was partly that because, we have to take care that we don't end up playing a whole concert in A and D because those are such nice keys for guitar.
Good point.
But it also fit the range of the original piece better.
That does have an enormous range, doesn't it, that piece? Yeah.
You have to do a little bit of compression inevitably, though, I think, when you're up
against
it. I
can't remember for sure, but probably, yes.
Yeah, an instrument with, maybe a 4-octave range up against one that has a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the sake of getting in one more piece from our guests, the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet, we'll get right to it, and after this we'll have the results of our quiz question. This is from Peter Maxwell Davies.
It's called Farewell to Stromness.
Sweet piece from Peter Maxwell Davies, a man of many parts. There's quite a bit of variety among his works. Where did you find that one?
Well, that piece was arranged originally by another guitarist from Scandinavia somewhere, and we just loved it. We actually heard it first on a recording by the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, and said, "Well, we got to play that." So it's a great piece.
Good choice.
It's called Farewell to Stromness, and it's the closing piece on their CD featuring dances of Spain and Argentina. Well, we had a little tidbit there from Scotland.
Well, a pleasure having you with us. Look forward to hearing about your concert tonight with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra.
This evening at 8 p.m. at the Overture Center, that's with the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. You can find information online at wcoconcerts.org. You can find out more about the Minneapolis Guitar Quartet at minneapolisguitarquartet.com. And for tickets tonight, 608-258-4141. Thank you very much, Stephen Newbro, Jeff Lambert, Joseph Hagedorn, and Ben Gattegno.
Thank you very much.
We really appreciate your coming. Thank you very much.